Imagine actually loving everything you have in your closet. I'm getting a little closer to that experience the more I get from Honeylove. I've learned I can really rely on the comfort, fit, quality, and look of Honeylove no matter what. And it seems like they think of everything we might want but didn't know existed. The Legging 2.0, for example, has it all. Comfort, function, and style. Smooth, soft fabric, hidden shaping panels that make me feel extra supported and confident, sheer-proof fabric so I have no worries, side pockets for the convenience I need, a super cute look, and more. And I love that I can wear them out and about, around the house, or to work out. And Honeylove addresses all of the typical complaints about bras and shapewear, too. All of Honeylove's products make everything I wear feel better. So yes, Honeylove has you covered for the everyday look, workouts, weddings, and more. Go check it out. Treat yourself to the best bras, shapewear, leggings, and more on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/newsworthy. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/newsworthy. After your purchase, they ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show and tell them we sent you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it. Today is Thursday, June 27th. We're talking about the first Democratic debate, rounds 1 and 2, why an online furniture company is facing backlash, and a little good news from some new data. Plus, the new tools giving you more control on both Google and YouTube, and when The Office will be taken off Netflix. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview today, all about sleep. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Round 2 of the first 2020 Democratic presidential debate is tonight. 10 new candidates will take the stage and answer questions on everything from healthcare to immigration to whether to impeach President Trump. But the first 10 candidates already had their chance last night. Remember, the field of candidates was split into two sets of 10. The long list of candidates means more women on the debate stage than ever before, by the way. Last night, healthcare was a big topic. All of the candidates seemed to want to expand access to healthcare, but they went back and forth on exactly how much, with only two saying they want universal healthcare. They also debated topics like immigration, foreign policy, the economy, and climate change. Climate change actually got one of the longest discussions. There was crosstalk, but no major attacks or criticisms. When asked what's the biggest threat facing America right now, there was a wide range of answers, from China to nuclear weapons to climate change and even President Trump. So who won the debate? Depends on who you ask. Some point to frontrunner Elizabeth Warren, others to Julian Castro, and others to Cory Booker. The Washington Post says Booker got to talk the most last night. His name was also the most searched on Google during the debate. Trump tweeted, "Boring," during the debate. Fox News reports he was watching the debates from Air Force One as he made his way to Japan. A little later, he criticized NBC for some technical issues. But 10 new candidates will be back on NBC tonight, including top polling Democrats Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. It's all on NBC starting at 9 p.m. Eastern. Well, the clock is ticking to get the president's signature on a border funding bill, and now things just got a little more complicated. That's because the House and Senate both passed their own versions of a humanitarian aid bill this week. So the question is, which one will ultimately get to the president's desk? The agencies in charge of taking care of migrant families and children say money is running out, and it's running out soon. And lawmakers hope to get something passed before the 4th of July holiday. Both the House and Senate want to allocate about $4.5 billion to deal with this crisis, but they want the money spent differently with a different number of restrictions. So can they compromise in time? To be continued. The furniture store Wayfair is now caught up in the political debate about the crisis at the border and caring for migrant families. About 500 employees at the online furniture store walked out of work yesterday to stage a protest in Boston. On top of that, some customers are taking to Twitter to say boycott Wayfair and are canceling orders or returning what they bought. NPR says it's all because the company is reportedly selling $200,000 worth of mattresses and bunk beds to a new detention center for migrant children in Texas. Critics of the company now say they should not be profiting from these types of detention centers. But others are saying, what's the alternative? Should the kids not have mattresses to sleep on? Remember, reports have said conditions in these shelters have been filthy and disturbing. So far, Wayfair has not responded much, but did try to ease the tension by offering $100,000 to the Red Cross. It doesn't seem to be working. For the first time in decades, the number of drug overdose deaths in the U.S. could be going down. The Wall Street Journal reports the official number of overdose deaths from 2018 are still being counted, but early data from the CDC shows things may be changing. The data shows about 69,000 people died from a drug overdose within a year, down more than 3,000 from the year before. If the numbers check out, the annual drug deaths will have fallen for the first time since 1990. We should know for sure next month. A scorching heat wave is still impacting parts of Europe. It's breaking records, and it's not over yet. The Weather Channel says in the south of France, temperatures could reach 110 degrees today. That's just 1 degree away from beating the country's all-time record high for the month of June. The extreme heat will continue tomorrow, which could be a problem for fans and players at the Women's World Cup match in France. Back in the U.S., AccuWeather reports parts of the north central U.S. will see severe weather today. That's a threat for flash flooding, tornadoes, and damaging winds. Also of note, the first tropical storm of the 2019 hurricane season has a name, Alvin. Right now, the storm is a couple hundred miles off the Pacific coast of Mexico. So for now, there's no threat on land, and the storm is expected to break apart this weekend. All right, more news ahead, but first, a quick break for today's sponsor, and I'm excited to share some of my results from Ancestry. Ancestry DNA connects you to the places in the world where your story started with historical insights, but that's not all. For me, one of the best things was to amplify my results with a free trial on Ancestry to build a tree. That's how I learned about the people in my family's past, along with when and how they moved from place to place. For example, I learned for the first time ever that my maiden name was actually spelled differently before that part of my family came to the U.S., and Ancestry was able to track down an image of the actual ship my great-grandfather came over on with documentation showing he had only $7 to his name. Reading through the results made me feel connected to my family's history. So see what you find out. It's easy to get started. Go to Ancestry.com/newsworthy for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. That's Ancestry.com/newsworthy for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Ancestry.com/newsworthy. Now back to the news. You can now have Google auto-delete your location history. The new feature is live. Remember, we told you about Google's plans for this back in May, but now it's actually here. Google has started rolling it out for both Android and Apple phones. With a new tool, Engadget says users will get the option to have their location history deleted automatically. You can decide to have it wiped every 3 months or every 18 months. It means Google will have only some of your data at a time, not years and years of it. Google has faced some criticism for keeping so much data, more than a lot of people realized. So the company decided to start giving customers some more control. Until now, users could only turn off their location or delete web history manually. Now you should see the new tool in your account preferences soon. Google-owned YouTube is also making some changes. Bloomberg reports users will now be able to tell YouTube to stop suggesting videos from certain channels. Just select the Don't Recommend channel option on a video using the menu with the three dots. YouTube has been criticized for suggesting toxic clips like extremist content and conspiracy videos. The new feature will not necessarily get rid of these videos, but it will help you have control over what shows up on your feed. You know how you can see the front-facing camera on your smartphone? Well, one smartphone maker has come up with a way to hide it. Gizmodo says Oppo, a Chinese company, is working on a phone that puts the selfie cam, or front-facing camera, under the glass display of a phone, meaning you can't see the camera on the screen. It's all smooth, and the touchscreen even still works where the camera is located. But when it's time to take a selfie, a circle animation will pop up to show you where the camera is. The company is still working on this type of phone and only says it'll be available in the near future, so stay tuned. Now that we know about Amazon's Prime Day next month on July 15th and 16th, a couple other retailers have announced their plans to compete on the very same days. Fox Business reports Target is having a deal days on July 15th and 16th as well. Target has done this in the past, and it's one of the biggest days of the year for online sales for both companies. Target points out that unlike Amazon, you don't need a membership to shop its special deals. eBay is also holding a sale of its own. CNBC says it's called a crash sale. It all starts July 15th. Well, you won't be able to watch The Office on Netflix anymore starting in 2021. That's when it'll be removed from the streaming service. The reason? NBC Universal will add the show to its own streaming service, which is launching next year. Fox says the service will be free for anyone with a paid TV subscription. Netflix will be sad to see it go. The Office is one of the most watched shows. And that's it for the main news today, but it's now time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know, only on Thursdays after the news. This week, we're talking about sleep, from how much of it you really need, to a new medical term that has come from those popular sleep trackers, to what you might not know about the effects of blue and yellow light. So my guest today is Dr. Sabra Abbott. She's the assistant professor of neurology and sleep medicine at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. And she's breaking it all down for us. So here's my conversation with Dr. Sabra Abbott. Hi, Dr. Abbott. Thanks so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
So let's start with the big picture and how much sleep is really considered enough and how many Americans actually get that.
So the general recommendations are that most adults should get somewhere between 7 to 9 hours of sleep, but that really varies from individual to individual.
And we've all heard of REM sleep versus other sleep. So does that matter too?
So that's a great question because a lot of people really are obsessed. They hear that REM sleep is important or they hear that deep sleep is important and they worry that they're not getting enough of one particular type or another. But really what we need is a healthy balance of all of the different types of sleep spread throughout the night.
I'm kind of picking up on the fact that you don't want to say a particular number for individuals because it can vary and it sounds like over-worrying is actually a bad thing.
Absolutely. I think we tend to obsess over perfection and having the precise number of X, Y, or Z. And really what matters much more is what for you feels like a healthy amount of sleep, what keeps you feeling refreshed.
My understanding from what I've read is that there's a fairly new term for that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the term is something called orthosomnia, which is actually something that my colleagues and I made up for this paper, where we were talking about the fact that we were starting to see a lot of people come into the clinic with this sort of unhealthy obsession with the data that they were getting from their personal trackers. And so worrying that they weren't getting enough sleep, not because they felt bad, but because their trackers were telling them that they weren't falling within specific norms.
Okay, so you're talking about the sleep trackers on your wrist.
Yes, exactly.
So tell me more about how people are using those and how they should or should not be using those.
Yeah, and so whenever the topic of this paper comes up, I always want to give the caveat that I don't think sleep trackers are universally good or universally bad, but I think that they should be used with a healthy amount of skepticism. And so if you're interested in how much sleep you're getting at night and you're using it just sort of as a curiosity, it's great. I do have a number of patients that we use it to give them some element of accountability. So these are people who may not be getting enough sleep, and it kind of keeps them honest and makes sure that they actually are getting into bed when they say they are. But if you fall on the other end of the spectrum where your sleep was fine, but suddenly you're waking up every morning obsessing over, did you get enough deep sleep? Did you get enough REM sleep? Then it's probably moved to the direction where you should maybe keep it on during the day to get your step counts, but take it off at night.
How do those actually work and are they accurate?
Well, the data on this is somewhat variable. With some of the devices, the algorithms are not released to us, so we don't really know what they're using. But it's likely a combination of measuring your activity. Some of them have heart rate monitors, and so looking at variability in heart rate and sort of taking all of that into an algorithm to determine, are you asleep or are you awake? They do a reasonable job in terms of figuring out, are you resting or are you active? Once it gets into figuring out the specific stages of sleep, their accuracy does drop off for most of them.
Are there any other trends or pieces of technology that we're seeing when it comes to sleep?
So I would say the other big thing that's out there right now is a lot of people are very obsessed with light and avoiding light in particular. So we see a lot of devices trying to filter amounts of blue light or changing the light in your environment. And so I'd say that's probably another hot thing, primarily related to the fact that we have all of these electronics that are giving us artificial light during times we wouldn't normally be getting light.
Not only can you change the screen to be yellow versus blue, but there's even glasses that some people recommend wearing as a way to avoid the blue light. Can you talk to me about whether or not this is all accurate, how much the blue versus yellow matters?
Yeah, so the science behind that, we know that our bodies produce a hormone called melatonin. And this is something that naturally starts to rise a couple of hours before we're going to go to sleep. And we know that particularly light in the blue spectrum tends to activate receptors that could suppress that melatonin. So you could basically block off that sleep signal by getting too much blue light at the wrong time. That being said, there's a lot more to the mechanism behind electronics keeping us up at night than just the fact that they're activating those blue light receptors. Intellectual activity related to doing things on devices also plays a big role as well. And the other thing that we think is key is not so much just getting that light exposure at night, but it's the contrast between having light during the day and not having light at night. And so if you tend to be in brightly lit environments during the day, it actually can potentially be protective against the screen exposure at night.
What about the yellow light if we turn our computer screens to the yellow or wear glasses that give us the yellow shield? Does that matter?
In terms of the glasses that filter, they can potentially be helpful right before bedtime. But I think the danger is that they're starting to offer these glasses for sale that actually have that yellow light filter all day long. And blue light is actually good for you during the day. It's just something you don't want right before bedtime.
I have to ask what your advice is to, let's say, new parents.
I mean, it's unfortunately, we have life to live. And so it's great to say you should get your 8 hours of sleep every single night and it should be at the same time on weekdays and weekends. But obviously, life doesn't work that way. I think you do the best that you can. One of the things, if, for example, you have to shift significantly and you have to sleep much later on one night than another, trying to find some sort of compromise where you're kind of falling in the middle, getting the sleep when you can, but not forcing yourself to spend time in bed if you're not able to fall asleep. But it's hard, and there are going to be the exceptions, and just figuring out the way that you can make as much time for sleep as possible within those limitations.
And I would love to hear what works for you when it comes to sleep. Tweet me. I'm at the NW Podcast on Twitter. And as always, you can read more about our guest and this topic in today's show notes, along with links to read more about all the stories we talked about in this episode. Just go to thenewsworthy.com, click episodes, and find today's date. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday. So we'll chat again tomorrow. Have a great day.